And now, the Low Post.
Welcome to an emergency Wednesday evening edition of the Low Post podcast, because it finally happened. After mailing it in against the Lakers last night and then publicly declaring that the Rockets were unfixable and that he had literally done everything he possibly could, I guess not including showing up to camp on time or in shape or following the league's coronavirus protocols, James Harden has been traded to the Brooklyn Nets in a four-team monstrosity in which the Nets send Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, three first-round picks unprotected. Four first-round pick swaps unprotected. Caris LeVert now plays for the Indiana Pacers, who traded Victor Oladipo for Caris LeVert. Victor Oladipo plays for the Rockets. Jared Allen now plays for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Torian Prince, I forgot poor Torian Prince. I don't know what's happened to Torian Prince, but now he plays for the Cleveland Cavaliers, where Jared Allen will become the 17th center on the roster. Maybe they will play all of them together. But the most important takeaway is James Harden plays for the Brooklyn Nets, who traded their entire draft pick future, everything possible. We've seen that movie before, to acquire James Harden, who, unlike Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett, is still in his prime at age 31, a perennial top three MVP candidate. They now have James Harden, Kevin Durant, and in theory, Kyrie Irving, whose whereabouts at this stage remain unknown and whose interest in participating in human basketball activities for the Brooklyn Nets remain unknown. That is a lot to digest, and I have not even digested my dinner yet. I have digested a lot of coffee. To help us digest it, one of my favorite guests, one of the people's favorite guests, Mr. Chris Herring of 538, how are you?
I'm doing okay, man. And yourself?
Woo! It's all happening.
All happening. And I don't know what to make of this one. I guess I'm kind of interested to hear your thoughts on it, because I don't really know what to think.
Well, that's boring, Chris, because you're brought on this podcast to tell me what you think of the James Harden trade. This was always, we have to start with the Nets, because the Nets have acquired the player in question.
Sure.
They are clearly all in for the championship. This was always the existential question that the Nets faced the minute they got Irving and Durant to sign and play basketball for the most part for their team. Do we want to go big two and a whole lot of depth? Or do we want to trade a lot of that depth plus a lot of draft picks, every draft pick, for a third star? And it seemed telegraphed pretty early that they were going to go to the third star route. The Bradley Beal noise started almost right away, and that is now transitioned to a trade for James Harden after the Houston situation has gone sour. And they traded a lot of their depth. Jared Allen had recently supplanted DeAndre Jordan as their starting center and their most important defensive player. He's gone. DeAndre Jordan, by the way, got benched last night. Straight benched. DNP CD. The bell of the what is the the whatever the twinkle in the eye of Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, the NBA's remora fish, always mooching off other superstar players, benched. And now Jared Allen, who supplanted him, is gone. Torian Prince was an important rotation player to some degree. Caris LeVert obviously was. Here is the Nets depth chart. By my count, the Nets now have nine players who you would qualify as semi-proven or proven NBA players. That's down from like 12 or 13. Kevin Durant, James Harden, Kyrie Irving, DeAndre Jordan, the only center on the team with any rotation experience. Joe Harris. That's fun. That's a nice lineup right there, those five dudes. Bruce Brown. I like Bruce Brown. I might call him a proven NBA player. I'll be nice and call him a proven NBA player. Timothy Luwawo-Cabarro, on his way to becoming a proven NBA player. Landry Shamet, if the Nets don't destroy his confidence, and Jeff Green. That's nine dudes. After that, you got your Tyler Johnsons, Nick Claxton, maybe the Perry kid they drafted is somewhat interesting, but that's nine dudes. The top three are the top three. That's who they are. So here's the question, Mr. Herring. Did the Nets improve their championship odds? Remember, this team came in with good championship odds, with real championship aspirations, pre-Kyrie going MIA. Did they improve their championship odds enough? Because I think they clearly did. That you can cobble together a workable rotation out of those nine guys. There will be buyout guys that come. They'll get a center. Did they improve their championship odds enough to justify the enormous outlay of draft picks and swaps?
No. To me, no. And you and I talked about this a few weeks ago, and I think literally what I said then was, I really hope they don't throw everything they have at Harden. In part because they have so much offense to begin with that I'm not really sure that's the best allocation of the resources and the assets they have to make that move this early when they have a defense that I think when you and I podcasted, they were second in the league in defense. And so I didn't even have a justification statistically to say I don't trust their defense, but I didn't trust their defense, and I said that. And since then, you know, the defense has been pretty bad a lot of the time. I think they're now 12th in defense, which still isn't bad. But, you know, what was the statistic that they're now 0-5 when they don't score 120 in a game? Which, I mean, they're basically winning shootouts. And they can win shootouts because look at their roster when they're at full strength. And you probably line yourself up even better to win shootouts when you have James Harden on your roster as well. I don't even know how we can talk about championships generally without knowing what is going on with Kyrie. And maybe that's not really our business to know. Maybe he's going to be out for personal reasons the rest of the year. Who knows? But on the one hand, I get it that you want to be able to lock these guys in long term. You've got two of these guys that are up after next year. Harden is up after next year too if they want to be. If they want to become free agents, I guess I have always looked at this team since the beginning of this year, before they ever played a game, as being a little bit light on defense, and you just traded away your best defender, at least in the post, and you added more scoring. But at a certain point, and I think we've seen this break-even point before with some of those LeBron Cavs teams, you have to have some defense. And you know, granted, Durant can defend. Kyrie, when he's really committed, can defend and be a better defender. Harden, you know, we talked about him the last time I podcast with you and the way he defends. They all have some skill on defense. They can defend when they really want to. But I don't know that you need this much offense. Maybe you do if Kyrie's not going to be there, but I just don't know that I would be willing to give up as much defense as they just gave up to add more offense onto this team. And I just don't know what to make of the Harden situation either. I'm sure he'll play more seriously now that he's, you know, he's going where he wants to go, but it's just it's very hard for me to look at this group and this team and the issues that they're dealing with Kyrie and say that I know that this is a championship team now, because I don't know what's going on with a couple of the guys that are on this team.
It's wild that Kyrie Irving and James Harden, if you just like made a Mad Libs out of the last 5 months in the NBA, it would be like, you would just fill in like James Harden, coronavirus, Kyrie Irving, Instagram, post-ups. It would just like these guys would be the stars of it. And now they play for the same team. And Kevin Durant's just like, I'm the reliable one now. I'm the guy who's got to be the leader. And by the way, the defensive responsibility on Kevin Durant is now enormous. He's their best perimeter defender. He might be their best big man defender. Again, they just benched DeAndre Jordan, who's the only center on the team with any NBA experience. Look, when teams go from two stars to three stars, they generally do it for one of two or three reasons. Number one, not all two-star pairings are equal, right? There's Michael and Scotty, Shaq and Kobe, in which case you're like, we have two of the top five players, LeBron and Anthony Davis. We can go all in on two. And by the way, even the Lakers tried to get a third star, but we can go all in on two stars in depth and win that way. Kyrie's not on that level. KD's on that level. Kyrie's not on that level. So there's that. There's the fact that your depth, as charming as it is when they're on rookie contracts and bargain bin contracts and guys you swipe from the dead and rehabilitated, it gets expensive. Joe Harris is expensive now. Jared Allen's going to make a huge amount of money after this season. Dinwiddie, who's not in this trade, can be a free agent after this season. All of a sudden, for most teams, you can't keep your depth anymore. It becomes too expensive for you to keep. I actually don't think that was the case here because Joe Tsai is richer than, well, basically everyone alive on earth and can foot the bill for any kind of team he wants. If he's willing to pay the luxury tax every year, who cares? But that was the case. The clock on some of these guys is, in terms of trade value, was ticking a little bit. And I think the ultimate one, the trump card for a lot of teams is if we have two stars and one of them gets injured, we're done. That's it. We can't win. If we have three stars and one of them gets injured, maybe if it's the right one, like it's not Durant, maybe if we get lucky, we can still win. Like
that's the Warriors situation that we just looked at, basically.
And well, they went from three stars to four, an embarrassment of riches. And that's ironically what happened when the Thunder traded James Harden. They got not great return for James Harden, but they were one of the best teams in the league the next year. And then Russ got hurt in the playoffs and they were done. That was it. So I think probably just for that reason alone, they've improved their championship equity a little bit. We can talk about the fit in basketball terms on offense. I'm actually more optimistic about the fit than most people. I think they're going to just be unguardable offensively, assuming James tries and is willing to play basketball again and not James Ball. But considering the limitations that are going to be there on defense, and like you can tell me, we're going to switch everything. We're going to switch. Well, yeah, the Warriors switched everything with five really good defensive players. Kyrie Irving's an okay defensive player when he tries. James Harden has looked like a zombie for most of this year. And when he's trying is like a frisky zombie, like a zombie that just ate some human brains and got a little pep in his step. DJ's all right. And like Joe Harris is pretty good. Bruce Brown's pretty good. I just don't know if you can build enough of an interior defense with that team. I just think, look, if you're trading for James Harden, you are going all in to win the championship in the next two seasons. Forget about his next contract extension, player option, whatever. You're going all in to win the title right now. And I think they probably improved their chances of doing that with this trade. I don't think they improved them enough to justify how much they traded. So maybe that means they had 10% championship odds. Now they have 15. They probably, or 20, or whatever it is. They probably overpaid for whatever that percentage is. But every one of those percentage points is more and more precious and more hard to get. So I don't have a huge problem with them doing it. And I'm fascinated to see how it works, particularly on defense. But I don't love the trade for Brooklyn. I think they gave up a lot. I mean, look, you can laugh. Oh, these picks will all be crappy. These players are too good. They're all going to be in their 20s. These picks run through 2027. So these dudes are going to be ancient or retired. There is a huge risk in trading that kind of draft equity, and it's a lot. And you add in LeVert and Allen, who are important parts of their team. I think they gave up a lot for a small but meaningful boost in championship odds.
Yeah. I mean, I'll put it this way. You and I were just talking before the podcast. We both have our own things to write about this. At 538, my coworker, Neil Payne, who's fantastic, ran the numbers on this and kind of plugged these numbers into our model at 538. 538's been really, really kind of weary of the Nets anyway, mostly because it kind of didn't know what to make of Durant. I think Durant is already a hard player to kind of just kind of pinpoint because he's so... He goes kind of so far outside the bounds of what a normal player of his size can do and what he's good at and how good he is at those things, but also having missed a whole year based on that. So it was really low on Durant this year, our projection model, and because of that, it was a lot lower on the Nets than I think people would have expected. So coming into this year, I think 538 gave the Nets a 2% chance of winning the whole thing, which Ouch. Anybody would say is low. Anybody... I test would say is low, and particularly after that first week where they looked like world beaters. This trade moved them to 16%.
Whoa!
Right behind the Lakers, which is second best. So that is one of the biggest swings I've ever seen. What that tells me, and I think you and I've had this conversation before on your podcast, our projection model probably likes James Harden more than any individual player. Because think about it. It's a system that kind of looks at the analytics and is basically giving points to people that that make use of three-point rate, that get to the free throw line a lot, that are consistent, that get to the playoffs every year and can power their teams to the playoffs every year. So James Harden kind of checks off every single one of those boxes. He's been durable. So on the one hand, I was kind of stunned to see how big of an uptick it gave them, but it also makes a lot of sense because I think our model – probably weights, you know, even in my opinion, maybe almost too heavily some of the things that James Harden is good at. It's the same reason we saw the Rockets favored in our model to beat the Lakers, which I think it's worked out some of those kinks and kind of taken some of those things down a peg. So from the standpoint that, you know, I understand this, I understand that absolutely he could be that boost that they need, particularly with a team where you've got a couple of guys that have been very injury prone in Kyrie and Kevin Durant. I understand it. I think Nets fans, as badly as they want to win right now, are probably having some cold sweats just about the idea of giving up every pick you have. They know what that feeling is. It's gone wrong before. Like you said, it was much older guys than these players are, and guys that, you know, are probably more elite given where they are age-wise than those guys were at that time. But it's still a huge price to pay. I understand why they did it. I'm interested to see it. I'm really interested to see it from a defensive standpoint, like you said.
Well, if they – so I would have given them higher than 2% championship odds before the season. If they went from wherever I was, and I don't know, they were one of my three picks in the East to like potentially make the finals. So wherever I was, if they gained 15 percentage points off that on the Zach Lowe scale, then whatever price they paid is worth it. If that's really how much championship equity they gained, and time will tell, then I don't care. Then they didn't overpay. Then this is absolutely worth it. And your point about Kyrie is, look, if Kyrie comes back into the fold, like doesn't retire or something, they can trade him down the line for draft picks and young players. If they decide that their model is unworkable, you know, he can rehabilitate his trade value. I mean, right now, teams looking at Kyrie Irving would be like, I don't know. If what you're saying is right, then they didn't overpay, and that's that. And I do expect James to ball out almost right away. Clearly, he needs to get in better shape. He's going to need to adapt again to a franchise that he isn't running, that he's not in control of. He doesn't get to pick the coach, the style, the teammates. The franchise existed to some degree in some form of quality, good quality, before his arrival. So he's going to have to
play. Do you see that being a challenge here, though? I mean, because one of the things I'm curious about, and I think this is amplified now given that, you know, the Rockets gave him a couple of stars to play with. Obviously, there was Dwight Howard, and that didn't work for whatever reason it didn't work. There's Chris Paul there, and, you know, at a certain point, maybe them not getting along as well. And then you have Westbrook, and none of those situations worked. Obviously, they got very close during that Warriors run where, you know, a thing goes different here or there. They don't miss 27 shots in a row. Maybe they win, you know, one of those series. But do you see that as being something that Harden kind of has to prove here now going to Brooklyn?
Well, I can tell you that if this came down to Philly and Brooklyn, okay, I can tell you that a lot of the teams that were in sort of the next circle of potential Harden suitors, and we all know who they are, Boston, Denver, Toronto, Portland, whatever, whoever else you want to throw in there, they looked at his play recently where he was listless, disengaged, and not only his play, but his off-the-court recorded partying, let's say, and said, we know James Harden is a great, great player. We know. We're not even concerned about how he's going to age after this contract comes up. We don't care about that. We know that the NBA is unpredictable to some degree. And if we get him and things go sideways, he doesn't like the coach, system isn't to his liking, star teammate gets hurt, how are we to know that this guy that we're watching now is not going to be the guy that suddenly we have on our team, pouting and not engaged? Not only that, we talked about the 538 model and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Can we count on him in the playoffs? James Harden's playoff resume is checkered, to say the least. I think it's probably better than the casual fan gives him credit for, but I broke it all down before the Lakers series, which I thought was going to be maybe the defining opportunity of James Harden's career. It turned out to be a belly flop for the entire Houston Rockets organization, including James Harden. I broke it all down. A lot of James Harden's best playoff games, a lot of them, and a lot of James Harden's best crunch time moments in the playoffs, and I went back and watched all the crunch time moments, are Houston wins game four to stave off elimination in a 3-0 series, are Houston wins game three in a series they end up losing 4-1, are those kinds of things. In the biggest games and in the biggest moments, he just has not played up to his reputation. And a lot of those teams look at that and look at what's going on now and say, you know what? It's hard for us to really justify the cost that it's going to take. Brooklyn and Philly are to some degree in different positions. And, you know, look, Brooklyn's all in. They're all in for the next couple seasons. I get it. And if they improve their championship odds to that degree, then this trade is absolutely worth it for them. And if they didn't, if it's a smaller degree than that, then it's probably not worth it for them, but sunk cost, whatever. And, and the other thing is, you know, people want to talk about who's a real contender, who's not. If you think Brooklyn can win the East, they are de facto a real contender. If you don't, even if you don't think they're as good as the Lakers or the Clippers, if you think they can get to the, if you're in the finals, with very rare exceptions like Nets versus Lakers when Shaq put Todd McCullough in the basket over and over again, you have a chance. The Heat, even for a hot second, look like they might have a chance if they stay healthy against the Lakers. So I guess we'll see. I mean, what else? What do you think of the fit from Brooklyn's perspective? How are they going to share one ball? There's a lot of there's only one ball snark already flying around Twitter.
Well, that's what I'm getting at with Harden is there something that he needs to prove, not from a legacy standpoint, but just from the standpoint of can he go back to being a guy that is part of a three-headed monster, basically? I mean, we haven't really watched him with that sort of calling, that sort of responsibility since he was in Oklahoma City, which was a long time ago, and in a situation where stature-wise, he was not viewed on being, you know, exactly the same level as Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, where I think some of us looked at the deal that, you know, the Rockets were willing to give him and just kind of make him the guy. Is he ready for that? And so, you know, now we obviously have seen that he can do a lot more than that. He can lead the league in scoring for 4 years in a row or whatever it's been. How does the ball move in this offense?
It moves up and down from hand to floor quite a lot.
So, I mean, that will happen. You know, and I think the good thing is these guys are all good passers. It's not a question of can they move the ball, but, you know, I don't know. I think their offense still has the potential to be fantastic just because there's spacing around them. So that's not a concern. It really helps when all three of you guys can really shoot it. I don't know. It's just very rare that you have such a wide gap with this many stars and so much offense and so little defense, or defense that seems like it's kind of conditional on like whether or not this person's trying or not. And we're talking about it as a three-star thing. It's been very rare, you know, that the two guys that James is going to be playing with have been healthy really at the same time. Kyrie has had a number of injuries, and what we're talking about right now is not even an injury for him. I can't remember who put it out kind of in the stratosphere. It might have been Nate Duncan, but KD has played really heavy minutes, I think, kind of out of necessity just from the standpoint that Kyrie hasn't been there. And, you know, being a number one guy again and playing this role by himself. So I don't know. I get, for all the reasons I don't like this deal for Brooklyn, I do get it from the standpoint of even if you lose one of these guys, you still have a shot at coming out of the East with just two of them as opposed to three. And I do think that has a lot of value when you consider who these two guys that James is playing with are.
I guess I would summarize my view by saying I like it okay for Brooklyn, but if you think Sean Marks isn't going to sleep at night with some night sweats, and if he didn't go to the bathroom a few times today and dry heave, I don't know if he actually, I'm not reporting that Sean Marks dry heaved. I'm reporting that I would have been dry heaving all day if I had made this trade. Like, this is not some no-brainer, oh, who cares, blah, blah, blah. This is a complicated trade. Now, fit-wise, I'm actually quite optimistic on offense, on how it all fits, mostly because Kevin Durant is the most malleable superstar in the history of the NBA. He has always been fine running around off pin downs, spacing the floor, screening. He'll screen for James Harden. He'll screen for Kyrie Irving, screen and pop, screen and roll. And then, yeah, he'll do his post-ups and his ISOs, which he, by the way, is amazing at. And to your point, looks like an MVP again already this season with almost no slippage in his game at all. Even his steals and blocks have started to trend up a little bit of late, sort of markers of athleticism. Harden comes in and immediately supersedes Kyrie Irving as the team's best ball handler. And so to me, the question of whether the fit can work is about Kyrie Irving more than almost any other player. Because James, yeah, James will do more off-ball stuff and he'll like do some dribble handoff plays and come up from blah, blah, blah. He won't play James ball all the time where he just dribbles 94 times and shoots a 35-foot three. And it might as well be me and you and two statues on the court with him. He won't be able to do that as much. But he's going to be the lead ball handler, and he should be the lead ball handler. He's better than Kyrie Irving, period.
What's interesting, too, I think, is, and I know I just had this in my story, and now you have me kind of thinking about it a little bit. Normally, when you have this big a collection of talent, you're worried a little bit about the egos that are involved. And obviously, there's ego here. But part of the breakdown with that in Golden State for Kevin Durant was kind of the question of whose team is this? And even if it was understood that, you know, Steph Curry was kind of the guy that built everything there and that everything was built around him, you could still see the tension between the differences in their game and how the ball moved around differently depending on whether KD was out there by himself. And not just that, but the tension that obviously was there and obviously broke things down in the end when Kevin Durant wasn't committing to the idea of coming back when he was going to be a free agent and kind of Draymond taking him to task on that. And different things like that. The fact that this is a team that everybody is pretty new to, you would imagine that's not there. And the fact that they all have opt-out situations that would make them free agents at the same time is interesting because you don't have any of that stuff hanging in the air the way you did with Golden State.
I would say it's Kevin Durant's team, and it's probably going to be James Harden's offense. And that's fine. Where does Kyrie Irving fit in? Because then it doesn't get to be Kyrie Irving's anything. And so he's the, if we're talking about egos or who wants the ball more, he's the one I'm looking at because when they're all on the floor, he's going to be the third option. That said, it's not like basketball works that means Kyrie Irving becomes PJ Tucker. Like he's going to be involved in a lot of two-man actions. They're going to make sure to call plays for everybody. He's going to be able to bring the ball up a lot and take control of the offense, you know, right from the beginning of possessions. And even if he is the third option on a team with this amount of talent and the team that's going to put up 120 regularly, Kyrie Irving's superstar third option is going to like fall over into 25 points on a lot of nights. It's not like he's going to suddenly average 18 points a game. He's averaging 27 now. He may not average 27. He's going to average a lot of points, and there are just going to be nights where if he's hot from three, he's going to have 25 points before you even know what's happened, and it doesn't even seem like he's shot that much. So I think offensively, the fit is going to be fine. They're going to be super dynamic offensively. All the questions are about their defense and their depth.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes! Catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's there up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, watch out for them. You name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, ooh, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code LOW. That's code LOW, L-O-W-E, my last name, the name of this podcast. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Let's turn to Houston for a second and let's ask the only question that matters. Would you rather have all of this? So four picks, one of which is Milwaukee's pick in 2022. So probably a bad pick. Four swaps, all unprotected. And now Victor Oladipo. Or Ben Simmons.
I think I'm okay with what they just got. And, you know, I kept thinking, man, it would be really nice to be able to build around Ben Simmons. And then I thought about who owns the Rockets and oftentimes what his priorities are and all this. They're probably different from what my priorities would be if I had that kind of money. Ben Simmons actually puts you on the clock with regards to some expectations if you build around them properly. And I don't necessarily know that the Rockets are in a position right now where they really want that, which I think is why Oladipo is now the guy that they went out and got, is a guy that they can essentially just let fall off the books after this year, if I'm not mistaken. So there's that aspect of it. Look, if you're a GM and you are dealing with the James Harden situation, and you think that you're capable of doing the job and want to show that you can do it, and it gives you a little bit of runway now to be able to do that. Now it's torn down all the way, basically. I imagine that at some point PJ Tucker will probably not be in a Rockets uniform if he doesn't want to be. Even if he does want to be, he might still be in another uniform. So this allows the Rockets now to kind of, you know, to paint their own picture as far as what they want, as far as the draft picks. Will they be really, really high draft picks? Not necessarily, but it now gives them assets to be able to move stuff around if they want to go get somebody else to some extent. So I think Ben Simmons is a potentially difficult person to build around, depending on how you're doing it and who is on your team. And so I don't hate the idea of taking this option as opposed to a trade with, as opposed to making a deal with Philly.
Let me be very clear. We're recording right now at 6:45 p.m. Eastern. I've made a lot of phone calls and sent a lot of text messages. I haven't talked to everyone I want to talk to. I want to be clear about this. I don't know what transpired between the Sixers and the Rockets. And I would be suspicious of anybody telling you exactly what was offered, when was offered, if there was even a firm offer, because I have learned, mostly through the Celtics, frankly, that reconstructing failed trade talks is a fool's errand and quite frustrating. But there were lots of reports that the Sixers and the Rockets were haggling over what Philadelphia would have to attach to Ben Simmons to get James Harden. So was it Tyrese Maxey plus X picks? Was it Tyrese Maxey plus one pick? Was it Tyrese Maxey plus Matisse Thybulle plus no picks plus two picks? I don't know. Here's what I know, or I'm 98% certain that I know. Ben Simmons made All-NBA last year and he's 24 years old. And if the Rockets wanted Ben Simmons, they could have had Ben Simmons. I don't know what was offered. Again, I don't know if there was ever a firm offer. GMs will often push back, oh, that was never offered. Well, did you talk about it? Yeah, but did you offer it? No, I don't know what it even like. When does it become an offer? I don't know. I just am very confident if the Rockets wanted Ben Simmons, they could have had Ben Simmons, and they chose this package over Ben Simmons. And not to be boring guy, I don't really have a huge problem with that. I wouldn't have had a huge problem with them getting Ben Simmons either. I think Ben Simmons is really good. I voted him all NBA and first team all defense last year. He's awesome. There is a chance that all these picks end up in the 20s. I don't think it's a good chance, but there's a chance. And yeah, all these picks are awesome. They can get into trade talks now. They'll never be able to compete with Oklahoma City and New Orleans if a superstar becomes available. But if they think this is more valuable than Ben Simmons, I don't have a huge problem with that. Because it is a whole lot of picks. It is a whole lot of picks. A whole lot of swaps. And it's going to turn into something. And as you said, like, you can build a really good team around Ben Simmons. It's just going to take you time to build it. You know, the team is Simmons plus shooting plus pace. That's a team. It's going to take you a lot of time to go from the current roster of John Wall and Christian Wood and whatever else you want to hold over from that roster. Maybe Eric Gordon. You know, PJ seems like he's probably on his way out. We'll see. To that optimal Ben Simmons team. And then you face the question of, if you build that Ben Simmons optimal team, is that team really good enough to win a championship? Can Ben Simmons be the best player on a championship team? I'm skeptical. I love Ben, but I'm skeptical that until he is confident as a free throw shooter and a shooter of any kind that he can be that. Maybe he can be. Maybe he proves me wrong. I mean, not a lot of people thought Jimmy Butler could be the best player in a championship team until the Heat were within two wins of a championship. So I wouldn't have... I frankly think even Ben Simmons by himself and or this particular return from Brooklyn / Indiana are both pretty strong returns for James Harden. And I don't have a huge problem with Houston deciding they'd rather have these picks than Ben Simmons. I just it's a cool, lukewarm, not sexy take, but that's my honest opinion.
Yeah, I mean, and look, if it was one of the iterations that you talked about with Thybulle and Maxey, then you probably got my attention a little bit more. If it's Simmons and picks, and like you said, these are not the sorts of picks that Oklahoma City is getting or the sorts of picks that Oklahoma City is going to be able to make for itself, it just as a team that's really going to struggle here for the next few years. You know, look, it's Ben Simmons. He's really, really talented. I'm trying to think about it the way that Tillman would think about this probably. And I just... This is a max level guy who, like you said or suggested, with him as your centerpiece, he either probably isn't going to win you a championship as your centerpiece, or that you're really going to have to really hit the nail on the head perfectly with regards to how you build around him. And I think that's a harder discussion to be had than just figuring out how you want to build out this team. Like it forces you into having to build the team a certain way. And I'm not sure that Simmons has proven that he's that dominant yet to where he's worth doing that for. If frankly, when you're trading for a player of Harden's caliber, you should be able to build the team kind of any damn way you want to with what you're getting back. And I don't know that you want to be boxed in as much as you would be boxed in by trading for Simmons and then saying, okay, now we've got him. Now we're going to build the team exactly like this.
There's also the fact that Houston somehow lost four draft assets in exchanging Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook and probably felt some need to recoup as many draft assets as possible in this trade. I think equally interesting for them is their decision that they'd rather have Victor Oladipo than Caris LeVert. A number of GMs and other front office people have been going back and forth with for the last 3 hours find that more surprising than almost anything else in this trade. It's not that the LeVert is better than Victor Oladipo. Victor's been playing pretty well this year after, you know, we hadn't really seen real Victor Oladipo, all NBA Victor Oladipo, since that horrific leg injury. He's looked more like his old self. He's averaging 20 a game. He's getting to the rim at basically career best levels at this point. He looks more like the old Victor Oladipo, but this is a guy who's almost 29, is a free agent after this year, has made one all NBA team in his career. And by the way, is a free agent in a year where there's going to be a lot of cap room and lots of dudes already extended with their teams and are not actually going to be free agents as many people had projected or expected, from Paul George to Jason Tatum, blah, blah, blah. He's going to make a lot of money. Caris LeVert is 26, probably not as good right now as Victor Oladipo, certainly not as good as Oladipo was 2 years ago, but he's 26 and he has this year and then two more left on a pretty decent, maybe team-friendly contract that would carry some trade value. I find that to be a very curious decision for Houston. I don't hate it as much as a lot of people in the league seem to, or dislike it as much as a lot of people in the league seem to. I think it's a huge win for Indiana, who was facing the very likely departure of Victor Oladipo for nothing or a decision to trade him at the deadline, and has in his place, in his stead, as a fancy person might say, acquired a very Oladipo-ish player, a driver, a pick-and-roll ball handler who fits well with Malcolm Brogdon, and like, because Malcolm Brogdon can spot up, shoot, and blah, blah, blah. I think that's a really nice little piece of business for the Pacers.
I was thinking this, and I wanted to get your take on this, because I was thinking it even as I was, before we hopped on the podcast together. Are there two players that, in a way, are kind of more similar to each other than Oladipo and LeVert when you consider... You know, they both like to slash. They can certainly shoot. It's not necessarily what they're known for, but they can. But also, you've got the questions about their injuries and the different things like that. And I won't say constantly in trade talks, because I don't think that, you know. Well, I don't know. Even with that, I feel like the trade conversation thing has been swirling around both of them for certainly for the better part of the last 4 or 5 months, just based on LeVert knowing that the Nets wanted a third guy. A third star, legitimate star, and Oladipo kind of seemingly of his own doing, or at least the people around him kind of suggesting that he wants out of Indiana. And so, you know, it's just very interesting considering that they both, you know, certainly can score, can do other stuff, you know, are fun, really athletic guys, the injury history. I looked at this and I thought to myself, man, the Pacers, like you said, came up with a guy now that, you know, come up with a guy that does a whole lot of the stuff that Oladipo does and is younger. I really like it for them. Again, and maybe I'm just jaded at this point with Rockets ownership. I'm not stunned because I'm not completely sure. Maybe Oladipo is someone that they absolutely want to keep long term. And particularly if he plays as well as he's played this year. You could tell me anything with regards to the direction that the Rockets were going to go in right now. It certainly makes sense that they would keep Oladipo because they just traded James Harden and he's their return for that, part of their return for that. But the Rockets, the idea of committing big money to people just doesn't really seem like it's about to be their MO.
Yeah, they made a big stinkity stank about how, well, we are going to get a blue chip all NBA level young player for James Harden. Going to get it. The Brooklyn offer, insufficient. We will be getting a blue chip young player. Give us your Devin Bookers. Give us your Jason Tatums. Give us your blah, blah, blahs. Guess what? Turned out to be a whole lot of bluster because they didn't get that player. They got a good player in Victor Oladipo who has made an All-NBA team before. I don't think he fits the bill of the player they were shouting about acquiring. But it's a good player. We'll see what they do.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast, the truth is all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning, wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can. If that's a 10-minute low impact class, they've got those. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey, learn the basics, and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
Small angle to this trade. I love Cleveland just swooping in and getting Jared Allen for the Milwaukee pick in 2022. That is a wonderful little deal. Now they can play Jared Allen, JaVale McGee, Andre Drummond, Larry Nance Jr., Dean Wade, Kevin Love. They have all the big men they could possibly want. That's in all seriousness, though. People sort of laughed at the Drummond acquisition because he so clearly doesn't fit their timeline. He's been playing fine for them. He's a good player. They got him for nothing. Might as well do it. Sexton, Garland, Allen.
I like this.
I don't know where Kevin Porter Jr. is. I like him as a basketball player. He's out for personal reasons. The Okoro kid they just drafted, we'll see. But he certainly plays hard and plays defense and has not been super shy about shooting threes. That's it. They got... I don't know what they got brewing over there. You know, I don't know where it's going to go, but it's going to go somewhere that interests me at least.
I like it. And we talked on the last podcast about them ever so briefly, because I think at the time they were still undefeated and, you know, knew that wasn't going to last. But the craziest thing, I was just kind of browsing through stuff. I've liked the way they've looked so far this year. Was browsing around through statistics. You know, Cavs had the worst defense in NBA history. What was it, 2 years ago?
I think last year.
Might have been last year. My goodness, the idea of saying last year and thinking about how long the last year was makes me think it was 2 years ago. They have the best defense in the NBA statistically so far, which I know it's early. And I know that, you know, I've seen teams do that sort of thing before. I've seen Denver do that sort of thing before, where they basically go from 28th to 1st, you know, for a while, or 28th to 4th and stuff like that. And it doesn't hold up. Normally, those teams kind of end up more, middle of the pack and stuff. But there's something about the way they look, and has looked that way for a while now, that certain elements of what they're doing look sustainable, I think, particularly with the guard play. Looking at it right now, it's still a little bit abstract because there's so many bigs. You know they're not going to be able to keep them all. And you've got certain guys that their deals are making it so that they're probably not going to keep them all just as far as the trade deadline. I'm interested to see now, with Allen, with Drummond, do you keep everybody? And if you don't, like, what are you trading these guys in for? What do you do with that? And does it fit with who you already have? I like the makings. I'm still not completely sure what it is, but I like the makings of it. And I think to some extent it's been reflected record-wise this year, and I think they deserve that. So it makes me happy for them to see that. I don't know what it is yet, but I like kind of the general idea of it, if that makes sense.
I'm still not over the Cavaliers' official Twitter account saying that they could not, for obvious reasons, they said, produce merchandise with the Sexland moniker on it, as if saying the word Sexland is like going to an NC-17 movie or something. Just call them Sexland. That's what they are. Produce the merchandise. Stop being so prudent about it. And if the Cavs finish with a top five defense this year, Chris Herring, here's what I will do. I will go on to the Cavs team store and I will buy one of those ugly ass City Edition t-shirt. I'll buy the t-shirt version of their ugly ass City Edition jersey, and that will be my gift to the Cleveland Cavaliers if they finish with the top five defense. And I want a Larry Nance Jr. one. So get the Larry Nance Jr.
I don't see it sticking either, but my goodness, man. Like, it's funny because the week that we did the podcast, I think they were 3-0. The last podcast, I think they were 3-0. And that was crazy enough. We're certainly not a full even month into the season. This is a little bit of the way into this. It's a little, like, there's something there that obviously has worked. I'm sure there's been plenty of luck.
No, there's no question. There's no question. It's not all fake. Like, if you're this, whatever games is now a somewhat meaningful, not super meaningful, but right. Nothing sample size. They're defending hard. Everyone is stealing the ball left and right. They have a crazy forced turnover rate. It's not all fake. But I'm just saying, if they finish in the top five,
I'd be surprised too.
If we even get through the freaking season, okay, yeah. If they finish in the top five, I'm buying a Larry Nance Jr. City Edition ugly t-shirt. That's it. That's all I'm saying. The one thing we forgot to touch on with Simmons as an alternative is, you know, in theory, you can trade Simmons down the line for something like the draft return that you just got. So that is one angle to explore in my lukewarm, I don't really care that they didn't get Ben Simmons take. It's something. But boy, oh boy. Are there any teams on the fringes of the Harden sweepstakes that you were surprised didn't end up getting involved more seriously?
I don't think anybody too seriously. The team that I'm still waiting on is Denver. Just a little bit. Like, do I think that they were going to get seriously deeply involved? Do I think Harden would be excited about going there? No. I do think, though, Zach, that we've talked about this enough times with Jamal Murray. We saw how unbelievable he was in the bubble. You know, he's a max player already. I don't really know where the average person thinks he ranks. The average fan thinks he ranks kind of league-wide. You know, for as good as he was, as good a performance as he put on in the bubble, like, what's his path to becoming an all-star in the West? I don't really know, like, for the next few years. I'm not really sure what that is. But, and I saw someone tweet this day. I can't remember who it is, so I feel bad for not being able to credit it. But, like, Nikola Jokic is, like, number one in, like, every advanced statistic.
And also number one in my heart.
A lot of people's hearts. He's been incredible the whole year. I mean, he's been doing what he does at just a really, really high level. It hasn't really completely translated in the way that I'm sure the Nuggets are hoping this season, just in wins and losses and stuff like that. They've had a lot of brutal losses. So that becomes like an interesting one for me, just because on some level, I almost could have better understood if they took the route that Brooklyn took, where it's like, okay, Denver's not projecting to be great defensively anytime soon. They lost a lot of talent on that side of the ball in free agency. They have Jamal Murray, and maybe you're not letting go of him. I don't know what interest level they'd ever have in really exploring that. But you also have Michael Porter Jr., who certainly is not really helping you all that much on defense. He's gotten a little bit better, but is not really helping you on that end. Kind of gives you a wealth of riches at times on offense. You know, and I think it's still, you know, probably a year or two away from consistently looking like he knows his spots all the time and exactly what he's doing, but does really well for not always knowing what he's even doing. Makes him a really attractive piece to a lot of teams. Could they have gotten enough interest if they had thrown something pretty serious at Houston? I think they probably could have. And I do think you're at a point now where, like, you've got a generationally great big man who would be really scary next to somebody like James Harden, who we talk all the time about how is it problematic that Denver, at least up until the bubble, had a guy that was really inconsistent handling the ball, really, really great when he's good, but really struggles when he's bad. Harden is so consistent when he's playing his hardest offensively, just the sort of threat that he would have given you to go along with someone like Jokic on a team that, like, you don't expect to play that much defense and maybe isn't going to play that much defense. That would have been really intriguing to me. So that's probably the team I would list if you're asking me.
I think it's safe to say had Denver made Michael Porter Jr. available for James Harden, they definitely could have gotten in the sweepstakes. And I think, you know, I talked about the existential question the Nets are facing. Just the idea of James Harden is an existential question for the Nuggets because he plays a diametrically opposed style of basketball from how they have played. That said, if you put him in a pick and roll with Nikola Jokic and you have Jamal Murray off to the side, you have those two are geniuses. They will figure out how to play together in the pick and roll. But I don't think Denver was really ever seriously in the discussion, and I don't think any of these teams were ever really seriously when it came down to brass tacks. I just don't think they were ever there for various reasons, right? Like Boston, Jalen Brown's awesome, and again, you deal with the James Harden thing for 2 years and you don't know his future there. It's uncertain. His play this season has been listless. Denver, maybe some of the same concerns. Toronto, I think at 2-8 is looking at the other version of the dilemma where it's like, if we trade, let's just say we trade Siakam and another rotation player. I don't think Siakam and Anunoby, I think, would have been a non-starter for the Raptors, but Siakam and something plus a whole lot of picks. Are we good enough to really win the championship in the next 2 years? Like Kyle Lowry's 35 is like, I think that may be their dilemma. And so it came down to Philly and Brooklyn in the end. My last question for you, Mr. Herring, will be, I want your take on this because this is something that I've heard a lot in the last few hours when asking people what they think of this trade for Brooklyn. It's a line of thinking that goes like this. Boy, did they play a heavy price to go all in for a season with no fans and so much uncertainty that it may not, quote unquote, count the same way as a normal season. What do you make of that?
I don't make much of that at all, just because it's going back a little bit, and like I said, this last year has been a decade, so I can't keep it straight in my head. Didn't they have like record sales with season tickets and stuff like that when they initially got Durant and Kyrie, you know, in free agency? And the idea that if they win big now, that when we can have fans back in the seats, I don't think there's going to be any lack of interest. I mean, I'm just thinking about, you know, where we work and the idea of the networks, how many more, like, I don't know that the Nets were maxed out on their national TV games this year. Maybe they were, but if they weren't, getting a third star like Harden does that, the exposure that they're going to get, like you've said too, and you've said this a couple times now, Kyrie, I think, is reputationally kind of in that same conversation with these guys. Harden has been one of the 3, 4, 5 best players in the league every year, consistently now for 5, 6 years, whatever it's been. And so the idea that you have him and Durant alone on the same team if they're both healthy and you add Kyrie into that, I'm not sure that you have to be worried about this year. I think the biggest concern for this year is, like, do they at least look the part of a contender all the way through? And if they do, and you can keep these guys together and they're not looking for a way out by the time their contracts are up, it's a huge win for Brooklyn that essentially makes it worth it if they can stay healthy. I'm not worried about whether the fans are there or anything from that standpoint. I'm not, but, you know.
It was less about the fans and more about, is this season just going to be remembered as an asterisk season and no one's really going to care that you won the championship this season? It's an argument that, frankly, I'm surprised how much I heard it today, because I don't think anyone views the Lakers championship as having an asterisk on it. In fact, I think the asterisk works as a badge of honor, if anything. And this season, sure, we're off to a rocky start. We're not in a bubble, okay? But there are scenarios where the playoffs are normal-ish, minus the fans. There are scenarios that the vaccine makes them normal-ish. There are scenarios, I think, I haven't heard anyone rule out the possibility of a bubble for the last two rounds of the playoffs or something like that to keep that brand of basketball intact. Beyond that, you do get James Harden for at least one more year, maybe longer with these guys. And like, if you're trying to win. Like, you're trying to win now. It's like there's a pandemic. Like, no one signed up for a freaking pandemic. Like, you have these players on your team. You signed them as free agents. You're getting a chance to play. You get a third guy. Like, what are you supposed to do? Oh, there's a pandemic. There might be an asterisk on the season.
Right.
We'll just roll with it. Like, just punt the, just whatever. I don't really buy that, but I was actually surprised how much I heard it today. What a day. What a day. And now, well, we got a couple months to the trade deadline, and what's the Wizards record?
What are not they good. Right now? Are they 2-8?
Whatever it is not good. And their best player is averaging like 1,000 points a game and lighting the world on fire, and now is even more than he already was. The bell of the ball as the vultures circle the nation's capital. Boy, when that sentence came out of my mouth, I did not realize how relevant it would be.
I was about to say.
Let's just conclude then. Any final thoughts on the Harden trade, or did we get everything you wanted to say, Mr. Herring?
No, I think we're good. I just really want to see can they make stops? Because if they can, which I don't expect them to be able to consistently, and maybe it means more moves are on the way. I don't really know what else you move at this point. Most of the other guys on this roster are kind of core pieces, more or less. So it'll be interesting, but maybe you pick up guys through, you know, free agency or what have you, or off the scrap heap, but buyouts, what have you. But it'll be interesting to take a look at, because we've rarely seen this much elite offensive talent together. And so there are some things that historically we've said, you have to be a top 10 defense to be able to do this or be in this conversation. It may not be true of this team. You know, it may not be something that slots in with this team, because this is just a really scary collection of talent that all can shoot, all can handle the ball, all can pass it, and you've got shooting around them. And so it'll be interesting. It's really interesting to have the coaching staff they have, that I never really thought of most of the guys on this coaching staff as being, you know, defensive masterminds at all. And so it's very interesting. It's like everybody took their sliders and turned the offense all the way up, and then, you know, forgot to flip the switch with regards to defense. But it'll be a fun challenge to watch, just to kind of see where they end up and what the future holds for this team.
Well, there's always another move somewhere, whether it's the Nets or something else. There will always be other moves to break down in podcasts and columns and all that. But this was a big one. It's one we've been waiting for quite a while, and it is here. Mr. Herring, thank you for helping us break it down. You can read Chris's stuff at 538. It sounds like you're going to have something cooking about this very thing, among other basketball things. Chris, thank you very much.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you having me on, as always.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.